Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm in Midrand today to talk to Shameel Jusup, Group CEO of Vodacom, for what I have no doubt is going to be an interesting discussion on the telecommunications industry in South Africa. Shameel, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you, Duncan.
First of all, let's start with the news last week that everyone is talking about, ICASA's final regulations dealing with data expiry. The regulator, in an earlier draft of the regulations, had proposed that data couldn't expire, wouldn't expire for a period of 3 years. It now appears there only has to be a simple data rollover, the length of which will be up to the operators to determine. You must be quite pleased with that.
Yeah, look, I think we made a lot of representations to ICASA. I think I'm not sure quite pleased is quite the term that I would use, because I think it's still a tough regulation, but I think it's fair. And also, most importantly, I think it doesn't destroy what's already there. And what I mean by that, I think if it had been implemented in its original form, the dailies and weekly bundles would have been killed, and therefore the consumer benefit would actually ended up pushing up prices. So I think this is a more balanced outcome, if you like. Still tough to implement, but I think we're fully committed to make sure that we implement it fully.
Okay. Now, ICASA seems to be using moral suasion to try to persuade the operators to implement a data rollover period. I think they're talking about for the further period that a new data bundle will be applicable on their contracts. Have you had any thoughts at this stage about how you might implement the data rollover requirement of ICASA?
To be honest, we're still busy with it. We're still working through some of the detail, especially the technical part, which to make sure that the systems can accommodate for it. So we're looking at exactly how to implement it. Some of the rollover already exists today. Mm-hmm. So if you if you bought a bundle and bought a like-for-like bundle, it does roll over your existing unspent usage, as an example. Now, obviously, the new regulations go further, so we've obviously got to make sure that we then comply. So I think there's a lot of that still needs to do it. I think just importantly also is to understand that this has got to do a lot, in my view, also with the in and out of bundle rates. Mm. And the differential between the two. Funny enough, the industry actually started with in and out of bundle the same, but then because of competitive activity, some operators were providing cheaper prices with bigger out of bundle rates. And that almost became market standard. Mm. And actually now you're reversing it, and you have to go back to trying to get in and out of bundle similar or the same. So it's actually a reversal, but you know it's already been built up in a particular way, and now you've got to change your pricing and so on to be able to accommodate for a new way of operating, which provides better customer clarity.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a bit about in bundle versus out of bundle rules. My understanding from these ICASA regulations is that out-of-bundle will no longer be opt-out, will always be rather opt-in. How is that going to affect Vodacom and the broader industry?
Well, I think it has an implication from the perspective, and if you look at the outer bundle rate issue as such, we've been trying to deal with the outer bundle rate issue. So we took it from 26% of our revenues last year down to about 12% in the last quarter, with the clear intent of continuing to bring down the outer bundle rates. Now, part of that is a portion of how revenues flow. The reason why it's been decreasing is because we've dropped out of bundle rate one, but also because of the massive uptake that we've seen on bundles. So customers buying more and more bundles. So essentially what's going to happen now is customers will have the opportunity to decide whether they want to buy a bundle or whether they want to continue using out of bundle rates. And also, I think over time, what will happen is the out of bundle rate will continue to decline anyway. And this will, to a large degree, also maybe affect the amount, because you're fixing a lot of the out of bundle by giving customers an option to choose and opt into a bundle. What will happen is naturally the out of bundle rate will exposure to out of bundle will come down quite significantly, in my view. So all that I think the operator, what the industry was really asking for, is just the chance to be able to adjust, almost like a mobile termination rate cut, that you need to be able to rejig your business to be able, because you work, there's a certain level of investment that you've got to put into the network, which you need to get a certain return on. The out-of-bundle rate, in-bundle rate, pricing, and so on plays a big role. Mm. So pricing as such has been coming down. Out-of-bundle is part of that pricing issue. So you need a time to be able to adjust it. This in some way changes the agenda and almost forces it to happen faster, if you see what I'm saying, in terms of by governing the opt-in or opt-out or rather opt-in specifically to out the bundle rates, that governs how much of out of bundle will actually be utilized going forward. And that in itself, we're going to have to look at the implications and see how we manage through it.
Well, are there any, do you think there are going to be any unintended consequences from these regulations that ICAS is hoping isn't or doesn't think is going to happen but actually might end up happening?
Look, I think, you know, we've just got to give ourselves a chance to be able to implement it, see what the implications are, and so on. But no, I don't think there will be. I think it's a rational outcome. There will be impact on financials. You've got to accept that. But we're going to have to see how we manage it, you know, and manage it in the broader context of the business in terms of managing the outcomes. But I think we're committed and we think it's a fair outcome. I wouldn't say we're happy, but I would say it's fair from the perspective that it protects the consumer. It protects the consumer, but it's doing it in a sensible way, as opposed to doing away with dailies and weeklies and 3-year expiry, which, to be honest, in my view, was illogical.
So a major improvement on what we saw in the draft, in your
Correct.
View. Okay. The last thing they dealt with, well, there were a couple of other things, but the last interesting thing I thought they dealt with in the regulations was the allowing data to be transferred on the same network between users. What are the implications of that for Vodacom?
So again, I mean, we've got to remember when you create a bundle, part of the pricing methodology that's used is you create a bundle for a particular time period. So your dailies and your weeklies are based on the fact that it's consumed quicker, and therefore you have a certain amount of breakage and so on. So you'll have to readjust certain of your products and so on to be able to accommodate for it. I think it's going to be important in how you implement the rollover as well, and we're still working through that level of detail. Rollover and also the transfer. Mm. So the transfer, in my view, has got a similar implication as rollover, because rollover gives you the ability to extend, and transfer means I'm sending it to someone else who can then utilize it within the time period.
Once these regulations are published in the Government Gazette, the operators will have, I think, a month to put them into force. Is that enough time?
That's the part that we're working through, and I just came from a meeting now where we're kind of looking at the implications and making sure that we've got all the technical capability to do it within the time frame. We want to try and make sure that as best possible we're complying with the time frames, unless there's a massive change. So we're doing all the technical evaluations at the moment to ensure that we can comply.
All right. And so far, looking good?
Well, it's still early days, so we're still looking at which is the best technical implication of how you can do it in the desired form, and what does that mean for other projects and so on. So we're going to have to put a whole lot of stuff on hold and effectively put the focus on this.
Okay. Okay, let's talk about the contentious Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. You had some strong things to say in March, comparing the bill to the Mining Charter, suggesting that if the bill is enacted, it's going to chase away investment. Has anything happened since then that has made you any less concerned about it?
Look, I think we've had, as industry, has had a number of positive engagements with government, where we've been encouraged by the fact that there seems to be commitment still to the hybrid model and finding a solution on the issue. What worried us of the last draft, and to be honest, it's still not corrected, what worried us about the last draft was that it didn't reflect the discussions that were being had. And there were slight nuances in some of the terminology, which is what we pointed out at the hearings and so on, which had dramatic implications on the industry. An example would be, in telco, I mean, if you look at the industry today, industry invests about $25 billion a year. Vodacom will this coming year invest something like $9.3 billion. Those investment cycles, which basically one increases coverage, increases capacity, but also helps us to drive down some of the underlying costs. If you don't have a long-term horizon and clarity on your licensing, what then happens is that you start to make decisions and shorten the level of investment. So if you know your license is going to expire, do you then put in the level of investment or not? So it's important, because the industry works on long time frames, it's very important that the industry needs clarity. So, you know, in the minister's speeches, he said that, look, and also the assurances that were given to industry was that the current licensing path is not an issue, or the current license is not an issue. What was reflected in the document didn't say that. Mm-hmm. So there was this disconnect between what the discussions were being had and what was coming out publicly versus what was actually reflected in the document. And that was our big concern, because then that makes it very difficult even to have a discussion. But for telcos, if they don't have clarity, it will affect investment. And that would be disastrous for South Africa in general.
So has there been a softening in approach from government since that March presentation in Pretoria, where the operators and other stakeholders made representations to government on the draft bill?
Well, there's been a number of engagements with various members of government. I think there's a willingness to engage and to come to find a solution to the issue. I think there's sensitivity to the issues that the industry does need clarity and so on. That said, you know, I think the hybrid model and really giving opportunity to new players is also a well-established principle within government, which we accept. Mm-hmm. And I think the industry's moved a long way, and I think government has moved a long way, but it's not being reflected in the documents that are coming out. And I think in there lies the frustration. So there has been a lot of discussions. We need to see now whether the next document, if you like, reflects the changes and also reflects some of the sentiments that were being presented at the hearings from the various operators.
Do you believe the government's negotiating in good faith, given that the documents are saying something different to what's happening behind the scenes?
Look, we do, and one hopes also that this new positive sentiment in terms of finding win-win solutions, will prevail, and that we'll find something that that the new document will reflect what's been discussed. So yes, we do think they're negotiating in good faith, but we'd like to see it now come through in the actual documents.
So what would you like to see happen next? Would you like to see another draft bill produced before this goes to Parliament?
Yes, one would like to see that the draft that they put out has been amended and fixed for some of the nuances things like where there were slight nuances in the wording, like the licensing, like cost-based access versus cost-plus access. Those slight nuances have dramatic implications. You're asking someone to, example, we need fiber in South Africa. You're asking someone to invest into fiber, and then you're saying, and by the way, the next day you're going to have to open it up to everyone. It's like saying, look, please go build a house, mm-hmm. and the next day we're going to rent out all your rooms at cost. It's not going to happen. I mean, no sensible investor, whether it's a house or infrastructure, is going to do it. So these are the kind of nuances that I think needs to be addressed. I don't think it was the intention, but those nuances were not properly captured in the document, and therefore creates a lot of nervousness from investors.
Okay. Let's talk about spectrum and government's planned wholesale open access network, or WOAN. Government wants to bring down prices, especially data prices, but Vodacom and MTN and others are opposed to the idea of a so-called dominant WOAN. But can a WOAN in any form be made to work, and if so, how?
Look, I think the when you look at the markets around the world and you look at best practice, competition needs to exist at different levels, and competition needs to exist at the infrastructure level, but competition also needs to exist at the retail and consumer level as well. Now, one of the things that you're faced with, I think, around the world is if you take away infrastructure competition, you end up with a monopoly, and a monopoly is never good, because then it gets to set the pace of the connection. Let me just give you a practical example of what's happening in South Africa today. So a couple of years ago, about 3-4 years ago, we created a project which we call Project Spring, where effectively we decided to increase the level of capital investment into our network from a competitive perspective. So we wanted to put more money into our network, also taking into account some of the concerns and nuances that were around in terms of 4G coverage and speed and quality of the networks and so on. So we upped our level of investment. That then forced the rest of the industry to also up the level of investment. And you've seen MTN also being quite aggressive in terms of their level of investment. So and Telkom and Cell C and so on as well. So you start to see this level of investment that gets put in. That then creates jobs. So yes, in fairness, there is duplication because you are rolling out a similar kind of infrastructure, but in there lies the benefit because of this race, if you like, or that you're competing on multiple levels of which infrastructure is what. Mm. It does force us to build out quicker. An example would be we had 150 rural sites go live in March. Now we see that as a competitive part in terms of ensuring that the rural coverage is doing or increasing our access. If you had one big monopoly, they might decide never to build rural coverage, as an example. So you do end up in a situation where if you put all your eggs in one basket, you might not necessarily get the result. That said, there is a place for a WAN. And really, in my view, what you're trying to achieve with the WAN is to give a smaller players a chance to work together. Now, you see this in various forms in different countries. You see networks working together, building NetCos or building a network together and so on. And that today is available to smaller players. So you can have people combining their spend. You're seeing in-market consolidation, the latest one being the in-market consolidation in the U.S. So you do have operators working together at the very on the extreme end consolidation, on the other end where they work together in infrastructure. An example would be when I was in Spain, we built a part, we identified the areas where there was less population sizes, and obviously commercially probably less attractive. So we came up with a shared model in that respect. We built a part in one country, one part of the country. Orange built another part of the country, and we shared. So there is those type of models that do exist.
But shouldn't that be left to the operators to decide what those models should look like rather than having a construct in the form of a WAN forced onto the market by government?
Correct. And the WAN, in my view, especially if you create, hasn't got any proven credibility anywhere in the world. The Mexican model is too new. The other ones around have actually failed. So there hasn't really been a construct. That said, if you created a WAN and you said, look, year spectrum for the smaller players, newer players, these type of things, and almost gives them the ability to consolidate their spend. Because if you gave them individual licenses, what would happen is everybody would start building from cent and out, as I like to call it.
Right.
You start with the most lucrative areas, and then you build out from there. Now, if you've got a lack of capex, so if I've got $2 billion and you've got $2 billion, you're spending your $2 billion in exactly the same space as I'm spending my $2 billion. If we combine it, we've got four. So the one would help the smaller players to be able to do that. The bigger players, you still want to allow them to grow because they've got the customers. There's a dire need to be able to improve the service quality or continue to improve the service quality of these customers as they're consuming more. So you have to be able to cater for the needs of the existing customer base, but you also want to say to the bigger players, look, you've been around for longer, so you've got to take on the rural coverage obligations and be able to build that out. And I think that's only fair. And you, in your licensing environments, you can come up with solutions that provide for those alternatives. So, you know, there's and now you're giving the WAN a chance to succeed. And I think in the proposals that we looked at for the WAN and what we call the hybrid model, part of what the industry was willing to commit to was to buy capacity in the WAN. And the reason for that was if we could then give it enough of an anchorage of saying you buy 30% of its capacity, that would mean that they've got enough cash flow to be able to create a successful business.
But why should you be helping your competition to build their business?
Well, look, I think that was part of what the negotiations and the whole hybrid discussion was about, was trying to find a workable solution which also appreciated that smaller players wanted to have their own spectrum and so on. But we also added, we also took on the part of saying, okay, well, if it's going to be successful, how do we help? And so I guess it's, you know, in the purest form, it's not really our responsibility, but I think in a win-win situation and be able to create the transformational part that we're looking for, I think that that would be a responsible thing for industry to do.
Do you think the competition laws in South Africa are too tough related to the subject? I mean, Vodacom tried to buy Neotel, that was burned by the regulators eventually. Telkom tried to do, which is the smallest mobile operator in South Africa, tried to do a radio access network sharing deal with MTN, and that, as I understand it, was rejected by the regulators. Do you think the competition authorities have too much say over what happens in the sector?
Look, I think we need more flexibility. I think an example would have been if we did buy Neotel. I think the fiber play in the country would have been a lot bigger today. I think that would have driven more momentum more momentum on the fiber. So I think we need to look at capacitating these authorities more in terms of specifically with the right expertise for this sector, because I think the timelines take too long, which is one issue. And secondly, I think you need to accept what's going around around the world. And around the world, in-market consolidation is in the telco sector, as it becomes more tougher to be able to get a return to continue the investment. It is happening more and more. So and we need to be cognizant of these trends, and then make sure that our competition laws, regulatory laws provide for it. Mm.
Changing tack a bit, the Internet Service Providers Association wants to implement a model in mobile similar to the one we see with Telkom and OpenServe, where ISPs have wholesale access to Telkom's fixed line network to offer services. Could a model like that work in mobile, in your view?
I think we do have it to some degree with roaming offers. So, Cell C has been roaming on our network since 2001. Telkom uses the MTN network, so you do have those type of services available. We do have it on some products and services where we've got specific wholesale products. I think you do have it in MVNOs. You know, an MVNO is exactly that. So yes, it can work, and I think you can have MVNOs in the market too. And there was, if you remember from the ICASA part, where it was going to regulate the number of MVNOs that needed to be created. Mm. So those things do exist, and I think it is a way to also deal with the issue. But I think you need to decide which route you want to go down, because the one is an alternative to this. If you didn't do the one, you could do more MVNOs. Mm. You know, that could be a different solution or a different potential solution.
What role is there for MVNOs while we're on the subject, and is Vodacom actively courting any?
Look, the issue for us on MVNO is honestly the issue that we have today is capacity.
Okay.
So it's very difficult for us because we are spectrum. The spectrum issue in South Africa, in my view, is a complete debacle. And that's why this discussion, if you take a step back, the digital migration still hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. And that's worrying. And the amount of changes that we've had that doesn't help, because it's a bit of stop-start. And so the issue is that the digital migration has to take place, because otherwise the debates that we're having are in spectrum that's not available. In my view, it's going to take you 2-3 years. Some countries it's taken as long as 6-7 years to clean up the digital migration. So we've fallen way behind in terms of the availability of the correct spectrum for 4G. What the industry has done is we've refarmed spectrum, and we've tried to optimize as in many ways possible and use all the latest technologies and so on in what is a spectrum-starved environment. And honestly, we're spending $9.3 billion, so it's not a lack of capital investment. But if you ask me, are we spending the $9.3 billion optimally, the answer is no. And the reason it's no is because using the existing base stations and using spectrum, you can optimize the cost, therefore bring down your underlying cost to carry, which therefore then leads into a direct reduction in the price per meg or the price per gig.
And your commercial models like MVNOs.
Correct. And allows you to have the capacity to cope for MVNOs. The MVNOs on networks that don't have as many customers, like Cell C, like Rain, like Liquid, and so on, are more feasible than they are on us and potentially MTN, where you are spectrum constrained. So you're trying to, and remember, we're also carrying a lot of Cell C's traffic on our existing spectrum, which I don't think many people realize. Mm-hmm. Because Cell C is roaming and Telkom to a degree, at Telkom on MTN, those traffics are being carried on the spectrum bands of the existing operators. So the system, the we're really being strangulated at the moment. So we need to sort out the spectrum part. And that's why the WAN discussion, the digital migration discussion, is really, really important, because unless we resolve that, we're not fundamentally doing the right things to have a step change in the price of the cost to carry. And also, I think what's worrying is that we're lagging the world. Mm. And if you think about what's disappointing is, if you think that when we launched 2G and when we launched 3G, we were at the cutting edge. We were among the first networks in the world to adopt this new technologies. I'm worried we're still debating on 4G and 5G is on the horizon. You know, maybe there's an opportunity to jump straight into 5G in some instances, but we need a plan, because at this rate we won't achieve the broadband targets.
Beyond mobile, what are the opportunities for Vodacom in South Africa? Fiber access, content, mobile money, and complementary services. What's got you excited at the moment? What's happened, for example, to Vodacom's fiber to the home strategy and its plans around content strategy?
Look, I think fiber in South Africa, and I think to be frank, I think there's an overdependency on mobile. Mm-hmm. We need more fixed in the country. And we need more fixed, and therefore it's important also to sort out some of these regulations as well, because they also affect, as they affect mobile, they also affect fixed. That then will also attract new players, but also increase the level of investment that you can put into the fixed part as well. I think we need to up our level of investment into fixed, either in the form of JVs or in the form of straight out investment. And I think over what you will see from us is that we will start to play a bigger role in the fixed space. Our rollout is going quite well, but we're not the biggest of players in the fiber to the home space as yet, and therefore we need to put more investment into it. I think that's fair.
Do you want to be the biggest player in fiber to the home?
I don't know if we want to be the biggest player, but we all want to be a meaningful player in the fiber to the home space, and also increase our level of capital investment in the fiber to the home space. I think in terms of the other services, I think it's quite a few exciting services. I think content is going to become a bigger play. I think you've already seen video offerings from Cell C, Telkom. And I think you will find we will launch within the next couple of weeks or months our video offering as well. So I think video will be part of a telco offering. I think stronger offerings in gaming, music, and content in general will come more to the fore. I think you're seeing a lot of strategic partnerships, like we have with Facebook and Facebook Flex, where we make Facebook free to customers. I think, you know, we'll also play a more meaningful role. And then financial services is a very exciting area for us. We've got a very successful insurance business. We've got over 1 million customers that have handset, life, funeral cover with us. And we see a big growth opportunity there. We also see a big growth opportunity in financial services, being able to pay from your cell phone, being able to buy different services like airtime, electricity, and so on. So I think some of the things that we were going to do through M-Pesa, we will end up doing in South Africa as well, because the M-Pesa part is being hugely successful for us. I think we're now the biggest mobile money player across the continent, and really exciting in terms of the different products and services that we're doing from Kenya to Tanzania to Mozambique, DRC, Lesotho.
We're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you a bit about 5G. We've touched on it already, and as you've hinted, it's going to be all about spectrum. But we've already seen some early technology demonstrations in South Africa of 5G. What, in your view, beyond the spectrum issue, of course, should the policymaker and the regulator be doing to facilitate the introduction of 5G in South Africa? And how would Vodacom like to approach its launch in South Africa in an ideal world?
So my view is that we need to be practical. And I think the practicality that I would like to see is that we need to accept that the digital migration hasn't happened. Therefore, we need to get on with that and make it happen. But we also need to say to ourselves, there's probably an opportunity with the spectrum being available on 5G more easily than it is on 4G, that we make some of that spectrum available now. And then what that does is it then gives the ability for us to almost catapult into the 5G space and be up in that leading space again. So I wouldn't like to see an environment where we're pushing 5G out for a couple of years. I think, our modus operandi has always been we're at the cutting edge and so on, and our networks are comparable to the best in the world. So I would license it. It would take a bit of the pressure off the digital migration, but at least people can get on it. That said, I mean, there's no real full 5G live implementations yet in devices, sure, and so on. But I think in this year, we will see a number of countries go live. And I think by beginning of next year, it will be well ingrained in terms of 5G. What we're already doing, and it does mean also, or at least you know when the spectrum's going to be available, because there's a lot of planning that needs to happen for a 5G network. As an example would be, you need fiber. So microwave will not be sufficient for 5G network. So you need to have fiber to your base stations. Secondly, a lot more of the capability will sit in the cloud going forward.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to make sure that you've got the right right cloud infrastructure in the different regions to be able to cater for a 5G network. And I think for South Africa, looking at our slow pace of fixed, 5G does start to bring a bit more equalization in terms of the speeds and capacity that you can achieve on a 5G network than you can today on a 4G network, and it makes you more comparable to fiber. So, and I think that could be quite beneficial, especially in achieving our broadband targets as a country.
But you say the spectrum for 5G, or at least some of it, is actually available right now.
Yeah.
It's lying fallow. In your view, it should be licensed. Should it be the same sort of licensing process as we've seen in the past for spectrum when it comes to 5G, or should a different model apply?
Look, I think you've got the same parts. Do you go the hybrid model? Do you go the parts? The same issues that are being debated could play out in this space as well. But you need to, we need to move quite quickly on it, because I fear that, we'll end up falling behind. And to be honest, I think for one of the industries that we could be really proud of in South Africa is the telcos have always been among the best in the world. Mm. It'd be disappointing if we fall behind. And just practically, it's not like 4G where we can still make a plan and this and that. It's, we're now at the point.
Crunch time.
It's crunch time.
Shamil Josub is Group CEO of Vodacom. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you.